This is an ABC podcast.
This is the South Australian Country Hour on ABC Radio South Australia and Broken Hill.
Hello, Isabella Pinaway with you for the Country Hour this Thursday, and we have lots to get through this lunchtime. Coming up in the next 10 minutes, we'll chat to the head of Pork SA about the rapid spread of African swine fever and whether the message is getting out about not bringing imported pork products into the country. Also today, what do you think about cotton being grown in South Australia? 0467 922 783. Lifting the ban on GM could open the way for the cotton industry to expand in SA.
There won't be any further allocation with a new industry. Growers with a water allocation can't get any more water allocation. It would just be a choice as to what crop they choose to use their water allocation on. But it's not going to result in any extra water being taken out of the system.
0467 922 783 if you'd like to have your say about whether you think cotton should be grown in SA. We'll have more on that story after the weather. And we start today with the weather because you've no doubt seen those videos with those horrible dusty and windy conditions. Perhaps you're experiencing them yourself. You are my eyes on the ground. I'd love to hear from you today. If you want to let me know how it's looking at your place, 0467 922 783. Brooke Neindorf is out at the Minipa Field Day on the Eyre Peninsula. Hey, Brooke.
How you going?
Not too bad, thanks. First of all, what's it looking like out there?
Yeah, well, we have seen those videos of the dust and dirt that's getting about sort of lower eastern Eyre Peninsula. And here at Minipa today, it is quite windy. And there is, I will definitely need a shower later on today because I am covered in a bit of dust. But it definitely... And not as bad as some of the footage that we've seen, but it's definitely not a nice day for a field day, that's for sure.
No, and you are at a field day, so I can just imagine how much talk there has been about the weather because, I mean, today is really the last thing farmers need after what's already been a tough couple of years.
Yeah, they just can't catch a break at the moment. It's definitely going to dry things out a lot more. And we've already heard, last week about farmers cutting hay and making that decision about what they're going to do with these crops. So they're really hanging on. There is some rain forecast, I think, coming up soon, hopefully. But, that'll only help a few crops. There is some that are sort of past that point of no return when it comes to sort of getting to the finish line. So it's unfortunately, it's just one of those things. Reasons again that a lot of farmers are still remaining positive and know that this is farming and they're not sort of hanging their heads too much, but it's just another sort of a kick for them that just devastating to see, particularly down towards that Cowell and Cleve area and around Arno Bay with all that dust and dirt. They've been pretty lucky that this sort of start of the season they've had a little bit of rain to keep things down, but then it's all that soil's just been picked up and blown away again.
Is there a sense that this is really just a taste of what's to come across summer and the months after that?
Yeah, I think so. It's definitely it definitely seems to be getting warmer and stranger weather. We've had a real mixture the last couple of weeks. It's been quite cold and then it gets hot again. But I think it's definitely something that a lot of people will be keeping an eye on, that's for sure.
And what have farmers been saying to you today?
And I said before, I've just been to a couple of them, you ask them how this weather will fare for them and they sort of go, oh, that's just the luck of the draw, really. And I caught up with Andrew Polkinghorne a little bit earlier and I asked him about how his season's looking. He farms at Lock and he had this to say.
They range from quite reasonable to quite ordinary, just depending on whereabouts in the district we're talking, yeah.
What's rainfall been like so far?
Well below average. I think we're down to about decile 1. It's a well below average season as far as rainfall goes, yeah.
We're here at Minipa today and the wind is looks like it might be slowly dying down, but it picks up every now and again. But, I mean, what does this wind essentially mean for this part of the season?
It just puts more stress on the crops and you prefer not to have them, but they are a fact of life and a fact of the seasons here sometimes. So, and there's nothing we can do about it, so we just have to put up with it. Fortunately, it's probably not quite as hot as what I think they were forecasting so far, so fingers crossed.
Have you made a decision about what you're going to do with your crops? Have you thought about cutting for hay or anything like that?
We won't cut anything for hay unless we get significant frost. We've had a touch of frost in some areas, but nothing too bad. And I think our crops are probably good enough that we'll run them through to grain. Yeah, and we're not set up for growing hay either. We came in voluntary hay growers last year, but we don't want to repeat it yet if we don't have to. Yeah.
And I guess now, essentially, what would be ideal to finish off this season?
Oh, a very good rain would still be extremely useful for us, and I think quite a few districts on our peninsula. So, yes, if we could get a good rain, that would be ideal. And if not that, at least very cool conditions.
So that was Andrew Polkinghorne. He farms at Lock, so he's here at the Ninifer Ag Centre field day today. And that seems to be the case for a lot of the farmers here, saying pretty similar things that, this dry, windy weather today and is definitely not helping things, that's for sure. So, fingers crossed we can get a little bit of rain in the next few weeks to finish things off where it can.
Let's hope so. Thanks, Brooke.
Thanks, Bella.
Brooke Neindorf there. And speaking of rain for Minipa, there's an 80% chance of 3 to 8 mils for tomorrow, so that doesn't sound like a lot. We will, of course, have all the weather details after the news headlines, but in the meantime, I'd love to hear from you today. 0467 922 783. What's it looking like out your way? Have you got really strong winds? Has there been dust or unfortunately, that it's topsoil as well that's getting blown across the state? What is the weather situation like at your place? 0467 922 783. If you'd like to send us a text, you can also give us a call on 1300 222 891. Well, the last of South Australia's volunteer firefighters return home from Queensland today, just in time for hot, windy weather that has emergency services on alert. South Australia sent the largest interstate contingent to help fight the Queensland fires. Acting Chief Officer Andrew Stark says interstate experience helps prepare volunteer firefighters for what they could encounter here.
We've sent 110 on-ground firefighters into contingents of 55, and we've sent 4 incident management teams of about 10 personnel at each time, and they've been working at fires, particularly in southeast Queensland, in areas of Warwick and Canungra in the tablelands above the Gold Coast.
And what were they doing there?
The incident management teams were working to on behalf of Queensland, to coordinate 2 of the significant fires they had there. And all our firefighters were actively involved in fire operations around those fires. Some of the work was direct attack on fires, particularly in the early days of our deployment. And then for the remainder have been working to mop up the fire and establish containment lines to increase the safety of those fires, not getting any larger and impacting further on communities in the areas there.
What does the CFS gain by sending crews to fires like the Queensland ones we've recently seen?
Oh, look, it just adds to the experience of every individual, whatever role they're in. Our crews have been working on the actual fire line in Queensland, they see different techniques, they use different vehicles, but it's that chance to work in a different environment and to see how things are done differently and some of those things they bring back as learnings, and sometimes they see those things and say, hey, we're doing those things much better here in South Australia. But it's great for even a firefighter on the back of the truck to experience that. For our people who are in incident management and coordination, again, they get to get immersed in the arrangements of another jurisdiction, and again, to showcase the capability of the South Australia, particularly in our incident management teams that are made up of not just CFS, but are made up of MFS, SES, and our National Parks colleagues from DEW, who all work together. And they're regarded as the best, or equal to the best of any of the teams that deploy around Australia. Everywhere we go, their skill and the way that they work together as a team and the way they integrate with other agencies is held in the highest regard.
And we just hope that the help doesn't have to be reciprocated. But South Australia is seeing some early hot, dry weather today. And there has been a focus for the CFS this fire season, particularly on Kangaroo Island and the Eyre Peninsula. But does this weather change that?
Look, it doesn't change our overall assessment. They're the areas where we're expecting higher than average fire to occur. But of course, right across South Australia every summer, we can have hot and windy weather. And if we have a fire under those conditions, very quickly life and property can be threatened. And we always urge at this time of year, just as the CFS, together with the South Australian National Parks and the Metropolitan Fire Service, are working to make our preparations for the coming fire season. We urge people on their homes and their properties and their farms to be making their preparations. We have seen below average rainfall for quite an extended period in many parts of South Australia, and we know on days that we have hot, windy weather, then fires can be, unfortunately, have tragic outcomes to the community very quickly.
Is there any particular focus for today from the CFS?
It's an interesting day. It's going to be hot and windy for a number of hours. At this time of year, some of the preparations that people have been making for summer might include some burn-offs that have been done in the previous days or weeks, and these are the kind of conditions that can stir up a burn that hasn't been that has been maybe thought to be completely extinguished. So we've asked people to be checking on any of those activities they've been doing in the previous days or weeks. But most importantly, it's a reminder that, you know, we've had a mild winter, quite a dry winter, and it appears that with these type of conditions, even though it's going to get cooler again over the next couple of days, summer is going to come very quickly to all parts of South Australia, and people need to be making those preparations around their homes, their farms, their properties, but also not just in terms of the things that they get out and do in a practical sense, but making sure they have a bushfire survival plan and they've shared that with their family and friends, so everybody knows what they'll do in the event that a fire does threaten their property this year.
That's CFS Acting Chief Officer Andrew Stark, and he was speaking there to Cassie Huff. It's a bit quiet on the text line today, which makes me think, have we gone through the worst of the weather situation? But if you'd like to let me know how things are tracking out your way, 0467 922 783. Briefly to some other news now, and a livestock truck that was carrying more than 200 pigs has rolled at Mundura near Port Broughton. The truck rolled on Mundura Road near the intersection with Routley's Road just after 8 o'clock this morning. Police say some of the pigs will have to be euthanised and a team from a local piggery has been sent in to help. And staying with pigs at 18 past 12 on the Country Hour, African swine fever has killed hundreds of millions of pigs and it's changing agriculture and trade as it spreads. So much so that some analysts believe it's the single biggest driver of change in agriculture this decade. Warwick Long spoke to Andrew Whitelaw from Mercado Analysis about how swine fever is redirecting trade routes.
Swine fever is spreading like a wildfire throughout Asia and Europe. And in the last week, we've seen it going into the Philippines and South Korea. And it's a bit of a cause for concern for anyone in the pig industry. It's getting so close to Australian shores now.
What, in your view, is swine fever doing to world agriculture right now? Because it's much larger than just meat, isn't it?
I reckon it's flipping. It's almost as big a story, in my view, as the trade tariffs that we've had the trade war between China and the US. It's almost flipping trade flows on their heads again. So, like, a good example is that traditionally, Australia imports about 50% of its pork meat from overseas, but the trade flows have now changed. So that pork that would normally come to Australia is getting swallowed up by China, which then means that our Australian pork meat price will rise because we just don't have the supplies to meet our demand. So it's changing trade flows. So pork will move from basically anywhere in the world to China now. If it can be exported to China, it'll go to China. But then it also has a flow-on effect to all these other commodities, like you said, other proteins. Funnily enough, we see it in mutton, chicken. We're seeing increases in prices in North Atlantic salmon. So we are seeing it just spread across all those commodities. But then the other one is things like grain demand. So in recent years, China's been an extremely important export destination for Australian barley. But if the China pig herd has been decimated and they utilise quite a lot of grain to feed those pigs, then the demand for imports into China will likely drop by a considerable amount, which is a concern because we export barley to China, and so we'll potentially have to find another market for that barley.
How long will trade flows be disrupted for, do you think?
Well, it really depends on how quickly life in China can get it under control. And it also depends on things like reinfection. If there's, you know, we tend to find in outbreaks that, you know, potentially there's, you know, you can get it under control, then a year later they have a secondary outbreak. So if they can get it under control, it won't take too long. But it's still, you know, a lot of the estimates, and our personal estimates here at Mercado, is probably it's going to have a big influence on protein markets, probably for, you know, about 5 years. It is a massive influence on pricing around the world for protein.
And we've had one analyst predict that'll wipe out 20% of the world's protein. How does that compare to your figures?
Yeah, it's probably not far off. The numbers are probably a little bit higher. You know, you're looking at probably 25% of the global pig herd, whether it's 20% of all proteins. Probably that forecast is probably a little bit high, I would say.
But a 25% drop in the world's pig herd is what you're working off?
That's what we're working off, yeah. At the moment, that's correct. But it all depends on how bad the outbreak gets.
That's Andrew Whitelaw from Mercado Analysis. Mark McLean is the chairman of Pork SA and was also the only producer at the Federal Agriculture Minister's Roundtable meeting on African swine fever earlier this month. And he joins us now on the Country Hour. Hi, Mark.
Hi, Isabella.
This disease is spreading rapidly across Asia and Europe. How concerned are you about this disease spreading to Australia?
Oh, it's a huge concern to all pig producers in Australia. The virus, we've watched it spread throughout Europe and particularly in the last couple of years into Eastern Europe and then down through Russia into China. And the spread in China has been particularly rapid, and what we've noticed is very quickly other countries that are bordering China have fallen down, from Cambodia to Thailand and Vietnam, among others. And only in the last week we've heard of South Korea being infected and confirmed cases, which clearly has come through probably the North Korean border from China. But what's probably of most concern to Australian pig farmers is the fact that just having a lot of seawater between us is not enough. The Philippines has broken, and they are an island, in the last week.
Are you confident that the current biosecurity efforts that we have in this country will prevent it from reaching here?
I think there's a lot of good things that are going on. There's no doubt about that. There's a lot of work happening at the border from a national perspective, and that's critical with incoming material, as in mail items, passengers, and also goods that people are buying. But it's just such a risk that one piece of product that entered the food chain and potentially ended in a piggery across Australia could break this whole industry.
What impact has it had on pork prices?
Look, at this stage, the domestic market's been rising very strongly in the last 6 months, which is necessary because most producers had been on very low prices for a couple of years, and the rising grain prices has put a great challenge to managing their costs of production. Over the last 2 years, the Australian pig industry has readjusted to these challenging circumstances, and the result is we're selling in the order of 10,000 pigs per week less nationally than we were this time 12 months ago. That's creating some shortage nationally, which is driving local prices. However, on the flip side, we've got this global picture where China's probably lost 50% of its pigs. And from what I'm reading, that could be up to 70% by the end of the year. But the big figures that I'm hearing is that we'll have at least a 20% reduction in global pork supplies. So a lot of the imported product that was coming into Australia to supply local manufacturers of ham and bacon is now more expensive to buy because there's more competition, particularly from China, for those products.
I'm speaking to Mark McLean, who is the chairman of Pork SA. And Mark, you were at the meeting that the Federal Agriculture Minister, Bridget McKenzie, had earlier this month. Who else was there and what were some of the things that were discussed?
Yes, I was asked to attend by Australian Pork Limited, who was there representing pig farmers as well. There was the Australian Pig Veterinarians, members from the Renderers Association, Animal Health Australia, and some of the areas that I hadn't thought about so closely before were people like members of the airline representatives, custom brokers and freight forwarders, amongst other agribusinesses like the sheep producers and farmers federations, the chief vets and CSIRO. But I think it was a great opportunity to get in one room the stakeholders that can impact on the movement of biosecurity or the protection of biosecurity for our country.
What sort of outcome are you hoping to see from having all those groups and sort of talking through the issues, including biosecurity and tracking and that sort of thing? What's the next step?
Look, I think the next step is for one organisation to be responsible for managing, protecting Australia's biosecurity, whether it's African swine fever or foot and mouth disease. Very similar modes of transmission now with such high movement of people across the world and products. So we really need one body that's responsible for directing what happens at the border nationally before passengers or goods come in, and then who's responsible within each state and how we would cooperate in the event that there was an incursion. And so we see there's three main things to consider: pre-border, post-border, and what on-farm practices need to be put in place.
Because that's the thing, we were sort of touching on this before. It isn't just the concern of it coming from overseas. I mean, is there a plan, I guess, if there's an outbreak here, because what would that mean between other states and trying to contain it?
Yes, there is a plan. That's been discussed, and there's a lot more work to do on that. You know, we've got to develop disposal plans. If there was, we need contingency plans. We need emergency movement permits. We need recovery. We're going to need cooperation right across states. We have pigs that are moved across state borders to go to different abattoirs and different markets. We need a strong surveillance. We really need to help the whole community get behind the fact that we need to protect Australia's biosecurity for all plant species as well as all livestock species and the native animals in our country.
And just lastly, Mark, do you think that there is a clear enough message or a general understanding from a consumer point of view or as a traveller about the risks of bringing in products?
I think it's improving, but not clearly enough. It's as simple as this. No meat products should be brought into Australia that have not been through the right process. So if you're travelling, if you've got friends or family overseas, you should not bring products in to Australia that contain any meat, but particularly pork. And it's critical that no meat products are fed back to pigs through swill feeding. This is illegal and you can get fined, but anyone who does have pet pigs or neighbours with a few animals, they need to understand that they could jeopardise all livestock industries in Australia with these practices.
Mark, thank you very much for your time today.
No problem. Thanks, Isabel.
That is Mark McLean, who is the chairman of Pork. Pork SA. And still to come on the Country Hour today, we're going to be talking about the cotton industry. And I'd love to get your thoughts on what you think about cotton being grown in South Australia. 0467 922 783 if you'd like to send me a text. And I'm asking you this today because we're going to hear how lifting the ban on GM could open the way for the cotton industry to expand here in South Australia. Right now, though, it is just after 12:30, so let's find out what else is making news today. It's good afternoon to Lucy Robinson.
Good afternoon, Isabella. South Australia has the highest unemployment rate in the nation on both trend and seasonally adjusted terms. The state's headline unemployment figure has risen from 6.9 to 7.3%. That's 2 percentage points higher than the national rate of 5.3% and 0.9 percentage points higher than the next highest states, Queensland and Tasmania. Meanwhile, Treasurer Josh Frydenberg says the government is within striking distance of posting a budget surplus this financial year. He's just released a budget update showing the deficit was $700 million, an improvement on the last forecast of a $4.2 billion deficit made in April. The turnaround is largely due to surging commodity prices and increased tax receipts. And a code blue has been activated across South Australia in preparation for extreme weather set to hit the state. The state government move means those who are sleeping rough will have access to shelter and services. There'll be more ABC News at 1 o'clock.
Thanks, Lucy. And look at that, a code blue launched, and today it's obviously a bit warmer and we've got this wind, but a cold front will make its way across the state. So for more on the weather and what exactly is happening, let's say hello to Senior Forecaster Tom Bowick. Hi, Tom.
Hello, Isabella.
There is lots happening today. We've seen those devastating videos of just the dust and topsoil being blown around the state. I mean, what else is happening today?
Yes, Isabella, certainly we have had dust reports from numerous areas around the state, including the Eyre Peninsula, that's as far east as the area to the west of Broken Hill there, and there's been reduced visibility at Woomera Roxby Downs at Port Augusta, and there's been dust haze at Whyalla. So, and accompanying that, obviously, we've got these significant northerly winds, so there has been severe wind gusts around as well, with 95 kilometres per hour reported at Minlaton on York Peninsula, 93 at Cleve, 102 at Cape Willoughby on Kangaroo Island, and there's also been gales, winds, averaging gales reported at Cleve and Minlaton as well. So, yes, certainly some significant winds. Now, the change that you talked about is currently between sort of Nullarbor and Ceduna there, so starting to approach the Ceduna area, and the temperatures are reaching into the low 30s ahead of that change. So we've been up to, in fact, even the mid-30s. We've been up to 35 degrees at Ceduna and 34.8 degrees at Oodnadatta in the far north there, 34.7 at Tarcoola there, and at this stage we've been up to 28 degrees at Kentane and Adelaide and 27.6 at West Terrace. So temperatures are sort of continuing to rise despite the cloud cover. Now, certainly we'll be continuing with these strong northerly winds ahead of the change, and there'll be those areas of raised dust continuing. The change, over the west of the state there, obviously sort of extending eastwards, reaching the central districts of the state during this evening. And then around about near a line, Coober-Pedy to Whyalla to Adelaide around midnight tonight. Not much in the way of rainfall with the change initially, but we do have a slight to medium chance of some showers and some possible gusty thunderstorms developing with and behind the change during the later part of this afternoon and evening. Over the western districts, also the Southern York Peninsula and Kangaroo Island. Then moving into Friday, the showers do sort of consolidate more into a band of rain. So mostly over the sort of southern western parts of the state. So There's a slight to medium chance of showers and possible thunderstorms for most parts, but then increasing to a high to very high chance of rain with possible thunderstorms for the Eyre Peninsula area, so that's worth noting. The south of the northwest pastoral and the remainder of the agricultural area, that band will be contracting eastwards later. To follow the band, there will be a slight to medium chance of showers with possible small hail about the western coast, the lower Eyre Peninsula and Kangaroo Island. Temperature-wise, back to a cool to mild day, and winds will sort of have eased back quite significantly, but it will remain hot in the far northeast ahead of the change, which won't have moved through that area initially. And there'll still be some of that raised dust in the northeast there. On Saturday, we're looking at some cold conditions in the west of the northwest pastoral early, so there'll be some frost patches developing through there. There's also a slight to medium chance of showers for the agricultural area near the eastern border, probably more likely about the southern agricultural area. There's also some possible thunderstorms for the southeast districts, and cold air coming in behind the change will see some chance of some small hail about southern western coasts in the southeast districts. Temperatures back to cool to cold in the south, grading to mild in the far north. Then on Sunday, there's another secondary front moving over the south, mostly for the later part of the day. So that'll keep sort of cold conditions in the south, or cool to cold conditions in the south, grading up to mild in the far north. As far as showers go, associated with that front, slight to medium chance of showers for the agricultural area in the west coast district. But with the front moving over the south, there'll be increasing to a high to very high chance for the Mount Lofty Ranges and the southeast districts. And also, the cold air will move a bit further north again, so some possible thunderstorms and small hail near southern coast and the lower southeast district. Then on Monday, conditions will be easing again as we get a high pressure system moving into the Bight region. So see some frost patches about the northern agricultural area and in the west early, and then a slight to medium chance of showers just for the southern agricultural area, and winds easing back to light to moderate southwest to southeasterly. The outlook for Tuesday to Thursday of next week, just a slight to medium chance of showers near southern coasts and over the southeast districts. That high that I mentioned will be moving slowly eastwards, but still some onshore winds along those more southern parts. And there'll be cool to mild conditions in the south, but warmer in the west and far north. Just to finish off, the cumulative rainfall totals until midnight on Monday. So with the band of rain and the showers to follow, 10 to 30 millimetres for the southern agricultural area and also for the Eyre Peninsula, 2 to 10 millimetres for the remainder of the agricultural area and south of the pastoral districts, with less than 2 millimetres over the remainder. So about lost my voice, Isabella, so back to you.
Thanks very much, Tom. There was a lot to get through there and could hear the phones going off in the background too, so no doubt a busy day for you all.
Thank you. No worries, Isabella. Thanks for that.
That's Tom Bowick at the Weather Bureau. And just a reminder that there is a severe weather warning for damaging winds for the Mount Lofty Ranges, Lower Eyre Peninsula, Eastern Eyre Peninsula, York Peninsula, Mid-North, Kangaroo Island, Lower Southeast, and parts of the West Coast, Flinders, Murraylands, Upper Southeast and Northwest Pastoral Districts. So pretty much the entire state there. Let's have a look at the far west of New South Wales now, and starting with the Upper Western District. A warm day tomorrow, mostly sunny, areas of raised dust in the afternoon. Overnight temperatures will fall to between 11 and 17, and daytime temperatures will reach the low to mid 30s. For the Lower Western District, day warm and mostly sunny day. A slight chance of a shower near the South Australian border in the evening. Areas of raised dust possible in the late morning and afternoon, and overnight temperatures will fall to between 12 and 7, with daytime temperatures reaching the low to mid-30s. Up next, we're talking about whether cotton will be grown in South Australia.
Hi, I'm Costa Georgiadis from Gardening Australia. Everything the ABC does is for you, and you can help shape what we do with our online feedback community, ABC Your Space.
I like being able to have a say on my favourite programs.
It's good to know they're paying attention to us.
Love our programs? Help shape the ABC. Join Your Space.
Every Australian has a stake in the ABC.
It's only fair that we get to have our say.
Visit abcyourspace.net.au.
You're listening to the South Australian Country Hour on ABC Radio South Australia and Broken Hill.
It is 20 minutes to one. My name's Isabella Pittaway. Thank you very much for your company today. Well, Australia's multi-billion dollar cotton industry could expand into South Australia once the state dumps its controversial ban on genetically modified crops in December. Conservationists have labelled the idea as stupid and dangerous and warned of an uproar if it happens. The nation's cotton sector is heavily reliant on genetically modified varieties. 99% of the cotton grown in Australia is modified in some form. Marty McCarthy reports.
The 1,500 farmers who produce cotton in Australia are split between New South Wales and Queensland, with a handful in Victoria. But the ban on genetically modified crops in South Australia has been a barrier for the industry in that state. The South Australian government has announced it plans to terminate the 16-year ban in December following an ongoing consultation period, potentially opening the door to cotton. Sally Seney is from Cotton Australia.
If you look at it on a national scale in terms of South Australia and also the expansion into Northern Australia, it's just about being able to supply our overseas producers. Cotton from Australia is seen as really high quality and it's really in high demand across the world. So if we're able to give producers of cotton overseas a more reliable supply of cotton, then that's only a good thing for our industry.
A 2014 scoping study by the Cotton Research and Development Corporation identified southern regions as new possible growing areas, but that, quote, bans on genetic modified crops are a current impediment to establishment of cotton within South Australia.
The Murray Irrigation Area in South Australia was the area that was sort of identified in that scoping study in 2014. So that area climatically would be suitable for growing cotton.
How dependent is a potential South Australian cotton industry on the GM ban being scrapped?
There are conventional cotton varieties available in Australia, but the vast majority of cotton in Australia grown has GM traits in it. So about 99% contain the Roundup Ready traits, which is glyphosate resistant. At about 97% typically contain the BT traits, which is the insecticide tolerant traits. So the GM traits, along with improved breeding, mean that the cotton can be grown in a shorter season. So that's meant that areas like southern New South Wales, northern Victoria, and I guess potentially South Australia could see cotton production in those regions as well.
The state government labelled the idea of a new industry considering an expansion into South Australia as a positive, but it was hesitant to welcome the cotton industry, which is seen as unpopular by many South Australians. Primary Industries Minister Tim Whetstone.
What it's telling us is that industries are looking to South Australia now with the view that they are open for business. I would envisage that cotton is not the suited crop for South Australia. We have a different water product. We also have a different outlook on our water security. We have a high security water. We also are looking for high return, high value crops, particularly in the Riverland. Anyone that's using Murray water is looking for a maximum premium return for every megalitre of water used. So cotton is not where we as South Australians would see ourselves.
The deciding factor for South Australian growers would be price. If the expected returns for cotton are higher than their traditional crop, then they might consider switching. It's also highly dependent on water allocations. Drought and low water allocations resulted in Australia's 2019 cotton production being halved, and those conditions are set to continue into 2020. SA also doesn't have the infrastructure for cotton processing yet, like gins, and many farmers would need to get geared up with proper planting and harvesting equipment. But the biggest challenge of all could be dealing with the strong anti-cotton sentiment in South Australia.
I think it would actually create uproar.
Craig Wilkins is from the Conservation Council of SA.
People in South Australia see what has happened upstream, particularly with the Darling, and there's a lot of concern about the future of Murray River flows. And like it or not, cotton is seen as one of the major contributors to the reason why the river is in such stress at the moment. The idea that South Australia, which is already struggling with potentially moving into a drying, long-term drying period, would consider opening up an expansion of a crop which has caused the river such problems, would face enormous community opposition.
One of the biggest opponents would be Greens Senator for South Australia, Sarah Hanson-Young.
This is very concerning that big corporate cotton, after stuffing up the Murray-Darling Basin upstream, want to come to South Australia and stuff up the river system and use even more water to grow cotton.
Cotton Australia says it wouldn't actually require taking any more water because farmers who are already growing in that area, they might be growing grains or corn, for example, would just use their existing allocation to grow cotton if it was more valuable. Does it matter, though, if it's the same amount of water but means farmers already using that water could potentially make more money off a more profitable crop?
Yeah, it does, because the water that we have is precious, and there's going to be less and less of it as we deal with dangerous global warming and as there's less rainfall in our state. The harder the river has to struggle to survive. And so the water that is there needs to be prioritised on those types of products and produce that sustains us. Our food bowl needs water. The big corporate cotton industry, I think they've got enough already.
Sally Seney from Cotton Australia says it would be up to individual farmers to consider all the positives and negatives of growing cotton in SA.
It would be up to growers to sort of come forward if they were interested in growing the crop. And if growers did come forward and were interested in growing the crop, there's certainly plenty of resources available in the cotton industry that would be able to help them.
That's Sally Seney from Cotton Australia, ending that report by Marty McCarthy. Certainly a lot to take in there, and you can see more on that story on our website, abc.net.au/rural. I'd love to get your thoughts on this. 0467 922 783. Should cotton be grown in SA? Is it pie in the sky, or would you consider it? Because cotton can be quite a profitable crop. If you are in the River Murray irrigation area, I'd love to hear from you. Would you swap to cotton? 0467 922 783. And even if you're not in that area, what are your thoughts on cotton being grown in this state? One text here from someone anonymous saying Senator Rex Patrick will love to hear that SA could potentially be using irrigation water for cotton production. I'm sensing some sarcasm with that text. Joel says no problem with cotton being grown in SA. It's not our job to dictate what gets grown on farms. Thanks very much for your text, Joel. And also a little bit earlier in the program, we were talking about the spread of the deadly disease, African swine fever, and whether the message is sort of getting out about not bringing in meat products to Australia. And Peter has texted to say, we recently returned from an overseas holiday and border security was a joke. We were the only ones on the whole plane that went through the declared lane. Where were the random checks from border security? It was more strict to leave the country than return. And Peter, yeah, I kind of get what you mean there, because I'm always interested when they have those border security programs. Whenever I've returned back from a holiday from overseas, everyone just seems to get waved on through. So that is definitely a fair point. 0467 922 783 if you'd like to have your say on any of today's topics.
On ABC Radio South Australia and Broken Hill, this is the South Australian Country Hour.
It is 12 minutes to one, and we're going to go from a story that was about lifting a ban, in that case GM, and now to one that's about imposing one. And Eyre Peninsula councils are calling on the state government to suspend plans for a snapper ban until a more rigorous scientific study has been completed. The controversial state government plans for a possible ban on snapper fishing because of dwindling stocks have been put on hold, with nearly 1,000 submissions received by Minister Tim Whetstone. Eyre Peninsula Local Government Association President Sam Telfer will meet with the minister this week to ask if more work can be done, particularly on the West Coast.
So this came from the EPLGA meeting up at Ceduna a week or two ago. And it's been something which has been brought up with a lot of our regional mayors, especially along the West Coast, concerned that the decisions are being made without full understanding of all the information which should be required for a decision like this.
When we first heard about this potential ban, fishermen were saying that it's not as bad on the West Coast as compared to other areas. Is that what you were hearing as well, that the West Coast is different to other fishing regions?
Yeah, that's right. And the consistencies between Gulf waters, whether it's Spencer or St Vincent and the West Coast, are very different. So we're trying to put to the Minister that there needs to be a full understanding of data from all the different areas, make sure that consistency is actually required and not just a broad stroke decision made for all the waters of South Australia.
You'll be meeting with Minister Whetstone this week. What are you hoping to take to him?
I'm going to highlight the point that's been made to us by our West Coast fishermen and residents, that the West Coast especially is different to Gulf waters and Spencer is different than Vincent Gulf. So make sure that the data which is actually being put together, the science which is being taken into account when making the decision, is actually comprehensive and not just single-faceted.
Minister Whetstone has said that science has been done when looking at this. Is that not enough?
Well, we're just making sure that enough data has been put in. Enough science has been actually taken into account because, as I said, there is differences and inconsistencies between all the different fisheries.
What sort of negative impact could this have on communities, particularly on the West Coast, where you spoke with officials last week?
I think it's fairly well understood that there's a big both professional, commercial industry as well as recreational with tourism that will be impacted if there's a change in the snapper fishing abilities. So the full measure of that isn't actually known, obviously, but we do know anecdotally that there will be a big impact on some of our small communities, which rely on these sort of areas to help sustain their economy, especially at times when agriculture is going through tough times.
Sam, the consultation process closed at the end of August. Do you think there's enough time now, if you speak with Minister Whetstone this week, to potentially change his mind?
I think we'll be reiterating what they most probably heard in consultation, but we're coming at it from a broader perspective, from that local government community leadership perspective. So I will be highlighting what I'm sure would have been heard throughout the consultation.
That's Eyre Peninsula Local Government Association President Sam Telfer speaking with Brooke Neindorf. Lots of texts coming in on cotton. I will get to them after this story. Staying with snapper and the Eyre Peninsula Local Government Association might have a bit more time to plead their case with the minister. Minister Tim Whetstone was due to make an announcement earlier this month, but as we've discovered, more than 900 submissions have been made on the issue, and he says that more time is needed. He told Narelle Graham he's happy with the science that has been done?
Well, look, yes, there is only one set of data that is justifying the science, and people are questioning the viability of the science. There was a small shortfall in the collection of that data being collected earlier in the year. But what I would say is that the science is what we have to base our decision on, but we also have the trends and the trend figures are showing us a significant decline, not only in the biomass of snapper, but what we're seeing is pressures on the breeding cycle of snapper has also not been favourable. So we've got warming waters, high temperatures through the spawning season, and the added pressure by fishing, particularly when fish are still aggregating and spawning in some of those hot spots around South Australian waters, means that they're an easy target for fishers to catch snapper, hence reducing the biomass of snapper stocks. And that's having a significant impact on the overall picture of a sustainable fishery.
One of the proposed options is just a few weeks away. One of these options is to ban snapper fishing for 3 years from the 1st of October this year. So that is just a couple of weeks away. Will there be some more science done before you pursue that closure date?
The science can really only be undertaken during the spawning season so that we can assess the biomass. We can also collect the data on snapper eggs and the production side of it. Look, it's very, very hard to dispute the numbers. We only have one set of data on snapper stocks. And while people continue to point the finger at the lack of science and data around snapper in our waters, it is the only piece of evidence that we've got to base our decision on.
Okay. And that decision is to go ahead with that ban, is it, as of the 1st of October?
No, not at all. We have put it out for public consultation. We've received well over 900 submissions on behalf of regional communities, the commercial fleet, recreational fishers, the charter boat operators, the fish wholesalers, and also the regions, the councils, the RDAs, the caravan parks. Everyone has had significant input, and that shows the importance of the fishing sector here in South Australia.
Mm.
And so we respectfully are going to delay any announcement on snapper management in South Australian waters until, respectfully, we've assessed all of that that input, and then we can overlay those submissions with the science so that we can actually make a decision on how we are going to have a sustainable fishery in South Australia.
That is Minister for Fisheries Tim Whetstone speaking there with Narelle Graham. Keep your texts coming in. We will get to them very, very soon on cotton. But just lastly on the Snapper and Charter Boat Association President Gary Lloyd says he's pleased all consultation is being considered and that the Minister hasn't made a snap decision on a snapper ban.
Look, in my opinion, the longer this decision takes to get made, the more chance we've got probably of fishing in one form or another.
Why do you say that?
Well, it's obviously not a clear-cut decision. He hasn't just gone, bang, it's shut for 3 years. He's obviously giving it quite a lot of thought. And, yeah, hopefully the right decision comes out. It's going to be pretty devastating for the charter industry if we do cop a three-year ban.
What's a typical reaction from your members to this issue?
Oh, they're all in shock. I think everybody was in shock, but there's a lot of very worried charter operators out there, myself included. If we can't access snapper, we just won't get the volume of charters to make it pay. A lot of people will shut down over this.
Can I just get it straight? You accept that there are issues with the snapper fishery in South Australia?
Oh, look, I accept that the snapper are in decline again, but I've been fishing for over nearly 40 years commercially and 25 years as a charter operator, and the stocks are far better at the moment than they were 20 years ago. We've just come through about a 7 or 8, maybe 10-year boom where I've never seen the snapper better, and there's just an adjustment now. I think they're coming back to somewhere around still above average, but yeah, probably a good time now to put some more measures in place and then we will have fish for the future.
But what you're saying, that seems a huge discrepancy. I mean, why is PIRSA then saying we even need to contemplate this ban?
Look, they've admitted it themselves. I think SARDI has that now they didn't get the science right last year. They had to operate under some pretty difficult conditions. They lost a few days with weather and everything else. And I just think they got poor results and they have to go with what they got. And yeah, the indications aren't good, but a lot of the fishermen that are out there every day are still saying there's good stocks around.
Now, you mentioned there are a few ideas out there. Could you? What are we talking about?
As a charter operator, we're fairly cut to the bone on our limits. We took a cut last year voluntarily. We cut our limits back again. I wouldn't like to see the limits go much lower for us, but I think the recs could probably adjust theirs a bit. And I'm sure the commercials, which I'm a commercial fisherman as well, so I can probably say it, we can probably reduce our trip limits a bit as well.
So you're still confident that a resolution can be reached on this, that we'll keep the fishery open but still have the fish stocks in mind?
Yeah. Oh, look, I may be proved wrong in a couple of weeks, but we can only hope.
That's Charter Boat Association President Gary Lloyd speaking there with Tim Jeans. Well, we've had plenty of texts on whether cotton should be grown in South Australia, and it very much has split people that have texted in. George from Barra says it sounds like putting money before our river's survival again. Mark from Mossvale in New South Wales has texted to say it would be madness to encourage cotton crops in South Australia. We're in dire straits with water as it is, and existing irrigation operations need to be wound back, as anyone familiar with the Darling River in New South Wales ought to realise. Thanks, Mark. Another text here from Anonymous saying, grow the cotton up on the Ord River, not here. Plenty of water there, and there's a new variety there that shows promise of disease resistance. There are also people in favour of having cotton grown in South Australia. Damien says we should have more annual crops like cotton that are only grown when the water is available. Permanent plantings like almonds, etc., need water even in low flow years. Thanks, Damien. Wally at Narracourt says farmers can choose their crop, but food would be my choice. And another text here saying, I think cotton will be fantastic to this state. It was the crop that ruined the system. It wasn't the crop that ruined the system. It was poor management and corruption. South Australia can learn from their mistakes. Cotton is a valuable crop and can be very profitable if run properly. Thanks for very, very much for those texts on cotton, and also to this texter saying that the government has to get very strict on border security on everyone entering this country, and it must start in the overseas terminals before leaving for Australia. And I agree with that very much so. That is all the time we have on the Country Hour. Enjoy the rest of your Thursday, stay safe, and we'll be back with you tomorrow. Right now, it's news time.
Discover more great ABC podcasts, live radio, and exclusives on the ABC Listen app.